You've read my mind on the reconciliation issue.
Oh, absolutely.
Let me ask if perhaps the use of multiple defendants in a trial is a handicap to more expeditious justice.
That was going to be my next drawback. Mm-hmm. So the fourth point was going to be our charging strategy.
Yes.
The charging strategy has to change. Mm-hmm. I have been involved in both joint trials and single trials, and I, when we look at both, it's clear that unless there is evidence and strong evidence of defendants acting in concert or one of a conspiracy, there will be no useful purpose served in proceeding on joint trials. In my days in the UK, we would have 8 or 10 defendants in the dock at the same time. But that was based on a strong case of conspiracy where we could use one witness to implicate all,
yes,
rather than call 10 witnesses to implicate one for one minor aspect. But in this environment, it hasn't worked very well. In the early days, one of our prosecutors, Louise Arbour, wanted so much to replicate what had happened at Nuremberg. And I was actually in the office in 1998 as legal advisor, and in the sense that I hadn't actually addressed this issue to your colleague's question, and she had asked what positions I had held in the office. I worked as a legal advisor for 1 year in my Kigali days before I came across to Arusha as prosecution counsel. And when I worked as legal advisor, I was involved in the formative years of the indictment drafting process. With Louise Arbour, we once drafted an indictment that was rejected, thankfully, with the benefit of hindsight, that implicated 27 people, Bagosora and 27 others. It was what we call the global indictment. It was an indictment that she had a concept in her mind to replicate Nuremberg, to charge those who had the greatest responsibility. In other words, the entire cabinet, the entire military command, and the political figures in a single indictment and charge them with conspiracy to commit genocide and other enumerated acts of genocide. In rejecting that motion to amend the indictment or the motion for joinder, a Pakistani judge in those days called Judge Khan, an extremely brilliant man, went through a myriad of reasons and said, first of all, how are we going to accommodate 27 accused persons in the courtrooms here? Where are their lawyers going to sit? Each accused person has 2 counsel and 2 investigators. Would the infrastructure present in Arusha accommodate? He dealt with all the practical issues. And then he dealt with the legal issues and said, well, delay in effect on the trial. God forbid one accused person falls ill. So what? It's... The whole process is halted, exactly, for 27 others. And it's an interesting decision to read, because he went through both the legal and the practical difficulties of actually joining 27 people in one case in the context of international crimes. I thought this wasn't feasible. We then went back to the drawing board, and that indictment is what became 5 cases today. The Mill 1 case, the Mill 2 case, the Gov 1 case, the Gov 2 case, and one other case. They would have been joined in one single trial. And that would have, I mean, we would have been here. Butare has been going on for 7 years or 8 years. It's only got 6 accused persons in it. You can imagine if we had 27 people sitting in the dock in Arusha. It wouldn't have worked. With an inquisitorial approach, by the way,
yes,
it may have been different. And that may have been what Arbour was thinking, based on her mixed experience in Canada.
Of course, yes.
At the back of her mind, she may have been thinking, all right, maybe this is, we can do this. But that would have worked if we had a purely inquisitorial structure, because then it would be the investigating judge that would take charge of the process, and it would all be dealt with on paper. And that may have worked, but not in an adversarial system. So in the sense that who is doing it right? Well, who's doing it differently? Sierra Leone is doing it differently. They have joinders too, but they're joinders that are based on actual conspiracies or people acting in concert, where they can use minimum witnesses to achieve convictions. I think Cambodia is doing it, right? I've been out there. My colleague who co-heads the prosecution there is Robert Petit. I worked with Robert Petit in Kigali in 1997 and 98, and I know Robert very well. He's Canadian. And I've spoken to Robert in relation to the approach. Cambodia certainly has its drawbacks in the sense that one sense that there's an element of friction between the government and the UN part of it. But in terms of the structure of the court for crimes that are being prosecuted several years after the events, I think the structure they have is going to expedite the proceedings. So we have Sierra Leone, which is a good example. We have Cambodia as well. But the ICTR's main success has been in its ability to actually apprehend the high-level criminals, which up until recently Yugoslav didn't, the Yugoslav tribunal didn't succeed in doing. Okay. So they all have their pros and cons. In terms of if you're looking for the example of the best example of international cooperation, it's the ICTR. By 1997 or 98, the ICTR had almost the entire cabinet in custody. In one operation in Nairobi, the Naki operation, 9 or 10 people were arrested, including the prime minister and several members of his cabinet. So in that sense, when you cross-reference to the fact that Milosevic was only apprehended or surrendered to the ICTY after so much diplomatic wrangling, and then now Karadzic, and you get the sense that in terms of the best example of international cooperation has come from here, clearly.
Been helpful. I have a confession to make. I amend my confession. I was once a prosecutor as well, so
most judges
I hear what you're saying with some sympathy.